This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, a podcast where we discuss the themes driving markets and the economy today and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we discuss the five rules for navigating a crisis, the obstacles we have to overcome.
I would simply say that this is a process of trying to imagine that the event for which you're preparing has already taken place. You put your plan into action, and it failed.
The hope there is.
Only one year, even if it's a terrible year, and this year will be a terrible year for many businesses, shouldn't affect the long-term value in the way that sometimes we see in the stock market, where shares can fall 50, 60, 70% in a very short period of time.
And the reality we face.
You know, just because a manager might have taken a maths degree or postgrad at Harvard or an MBA from Columbia doesn't necessarily mean that that individual will beat the benchmark for the coming 10 years.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all keeping safe and well. We're coming to the end of the traditional Northern Hemisphere summer, a time when usually summer holidays are at an end. Kids are dreading returning to school, parents keen to usher them off to their teachers, and for once, happy to be back in the office. Well, maybe not this year, at least the office part anyway, but it does mean that after the usual quiet part of the summer, things are starting to ramp up for investors. The final few months of the year usually come with thoughts of how it will end and how it will play out. This time, though, they have the pandemic to consider and a presidential election to name but two issues. It could yet turn out to be a return to the wild ride that was the first half of 2020. Remember that? When economies closed and markets tanked before rebounding nearly as quickly? Well, each crisis is unique. The bursting of the dot-com bubble, for instance, was different from the global financial crisis, which is massively different from the pandemic that's going on at the moment. Lessons are learned, though, and a set of behaviours are developed that should enable us to better protect our investments and to make most of opportunities. With that in mind, we thought it would be a great time to prep investors for the next few months or so with a set of five rules for navigating a crisis. With me to discuss them is one of Schroder's value fund managers and the man that came up with the five rules, Nick Kirridge. Nick, it's been a while. How have you been?
Surviving is the answer. You know, staying low and moving fast, basically. If the markets don't get you, then my children certainly will. But, you know, thankfully, good to hear you talking about going back to school. I think a bit of normality would be certainly in order for them. But we've been doing all right.
Yeah, and I guess from the sounds of it, you're one of the parents who are quite glad to see your obviously lovely children, but go back to school and get a bit of education from the teachers.
To be fair, I always feel that way at the summer holidays, not just when we have coronavirus. So it's very much kind of par for the course. But yeah, I think, you know, trying to get them back into kind of education and kind of using their brains and you know, actually being around their classmates be pretty healthy for them.
Good stuff. And it's not been so long, but still always welcome. It's Stuart Podmore, a behavioural finance expert. Stuart, how have you been?
I'm fine, thanks, David. I take issue with what you said about the summer being quiet. I mean, I think it's been non-stop for the last few months. So, yeah, gone are the days where there are peaks and troughs. I think we're just going to be busy forever from now on.
Oh, it's good to know you've been kept on your toes and obviously enjoying the cricket for, well, what there has been of the cricket.
I have. I'm really going to miss it, actually. I was overjoyed to see James Anderson get his 600th test wicket. It was interesting, wasn't it? You know, for people expecting it or hoping for it to happen when actually he has every intention of playing on in test cricket. So, you know, just goes to show long-term patience always rewarded.
Absolutely. Yes, longevity and good luck to him in the future. OK, so let's crack on with part one. And the first rule of navigating a crisis, which is fix the roof.
Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Okay, so Nick, fixing the roof. Can you briefly explain what you mean by fixing the roof?
Absolutely. So, I mean, every crisis is different. And I think if you're a fund manager, you're looking at most of your businesses and you're kind of asking yourself when you're firstly investing in them, you know, how do things get worse? If I'm a value investor, and I am a value investor, I'm typically looking at companies which have fallen out of favor. They're trading on cheaper valuations and they've come across my desk. And they're on those cheaper valuations because they've got things that are going wrong with them. And the first thing we'll typically do when we're looking at these businesses is just assume that things will get worse. But despite having done that, the truth is when a crisis comes along, crises, though they kind of reoccur on a vaguely regular basis, they tend to happen for very different reasons each time. And it's important that you go through and you understand how the crisis is going to affect each of the companies within your portfolio. And the first and foremost thing you have to look at is the balance sheets of the businesses. How solvent are they? Are they going to survive? And whilst we'll have looked in quite a lot of depth at businesses and assumed things will get worse, you know, in the case of coronavirus, would we have assumed a global pandemic closes travel markets globally and everyone's working from home overnight? No, certainly not. And you need to go through and understand. And typically when we're looking at these businesses, we're trying to look at the balance sheet, the solvency of a company, through the lens that we call the seven deadly sins, the seven ways that we think it's possible for businesses to blow up and to permanently lose our investors' money. So the seven deadly sins are a set of metrics that over the last 20 years of kind of experiencing various crises, and this is, for my sins, the third crisis that I've been through in the last 20 years, these are ways that we have found over time that it's very easy to lose money. So we want to look at factors like solvency ratios, which is, does the company you're investing in have too much debt? Covenant ratios, which is, does the bank that's lending them the money think they have too much debt, which ultimately is the most important thing. Liquidity, which is how long-term is your debt? You might not need a lot of it, but if it's about to run out tomorrow and you need to borrow a bit more, could be in a lot of trouble. Debt repayment, which is how trapped are you by your borrowing. Pensions and other creditors. I mean, what happens in downturns is that the queue, and as an equity investor, you're typically number two in the queue, is how you would see it quite often. You know, there are debt holders who get paid back ahead of you and you're the next. But when crises happen, that queue suddenly starts to get a lot longer. People start joining ahead of you. Landlords, staff members, pensioners, all of these people suddenly appear and want their money ahead of you. And you suddenly get moved down that queue, and that can mean some pretty bad things for investors. So trying to understand that on the equity side. And then finally, working capital, which is how quickly things can go wrong or go right for a business. And ultimately, and you'll hear this from a lot of fund managers, the old cash conversion. How likely is a company to be able to solve its own problems versus needing help from other people? And very broadly, those seven questions, those seven deadly sins, are the way that we think about company balance sheets to try and understand whether or not we're going to lose money for our investors.
So practically, what does that mean? I mean, how long are you spending poring over these companies' balance sheets?
Well, the answer, as always, is as long as you need to. Some companies are very simple, they're very clean, they're very easy to understand. Some are much more nebulous, much more kind of, you know, have their kind of esoteric factors. They have more complex financing, they're larger. And I think, you know, for all of these businesses, it's kind of how long is a piece of string. Many businesses that have better financing, we're able to move over quite quickly and say, actually, they have the ability to move fast in a crisis. They have the ability to cut costs in a crisis, and they don't have a huge amount of indebtedness in the crisis. And all of that means that there's a great deal of flexibility and our chance of permanently losing money is reduced. For other companies, we might have thought that the business looked very solvent, very strong, but actually come back to each crisis is different. This crisis, we're seeing extraordinary things. So a business like Rolls-Royce, for example, which in most downturns over the last 20 years, for which they have a lot of experience, they have prepared themselves for that kind of downturn, seeing the markets that operate their engines close pretty much overnight and remain closed for 6 months has had a profound impact on the cash that that business consumes and generates, more of the former and less of the latter. And as a result, has had an impact on how we look at the finances. And we need to understand that. So it's very much horses for courses.
And Stuart, obviously, Nick's got a team around him that can help him investigate some of these companies. How does an individual investor address those issues, say, with their financial advisor?
Well, that's a really good question, David. I mean, actually, what I think Nick has just been describing is sort of psychological or behavioral insight that's termed by the professionals prospective hindsight, or sometimes known as pre-mortem. So how individuals can approach this is pretty much exactly the way that Nick has just done so with that wonderful phrase, fix the roof. So actually now, to go beyond the fancy psychological phrases, I would simply say that this is a process of trying to imagine that the event for which you're preparing has already taken place. You put your plan into action and it failed. So what pre-mortem says is, well, okay, do that. Look for the causes. Try and examine before those things happen what might cause that plan to fail. And in so doing, the psychologists encourage you to try and break the emotional attachment that you might have to a planned success. And of course, that then leads to a reduction in any potential overconfidence, which we know can be destructive for fund managers, for teams, for individual investors. And actually, what it does is it strengthens your plan because you're employing a certain creativity of imagination. You're starting to look at those potential outcomes to see what might bring that plan down. And like I say, it effectively reduces any overconfidence and it tends to increase the level of realism that a team or an individual investor has. That's one of the most important ways of approaching it. And it was first developed by a cognitive psychologist called Gary Klein, featured in Sources of Power, which was originally published in 1999 and then interestingly republished in 2019. So very good timing there. But I think essentially, thinking about what could go wrong and then thinking of those solutions in advance or alternatives in advance. And I think actually we see quite a few advisors use that with their clients now. They tend to think in terms of capacity for loss. And I think that encourages this type of thinking, where very frequently, according to benchmark capital data, advisors now use cash flow modeling. It's a similar type of process that Nick has described. It's very much focused on the individual investor.
So plenty of advice there for investors about how they might go about fixing the roof. So once we're happy that the house is still standing, now we're ready for rules number 2 and 3. In the next part of the show, we'll discuss getting into the coalface and trusting your process.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor-download.
So no matter how bad things seem to get, the advice is don't go to ground, do not hide away. But Nick, what does getting to the coalface actually mean?
I think at the end of the day, there's no substitute for turning stones. You know, when the market becomes fearful, when shares start to move by tens of percent in a day, something emotional is happening there. The fundamental, no matter how bad things are in the short term, in the long term, every business is the sum of all the cash flows it will ever produce. And so any one year, even if it's a terrible year, and this year will be a terrible year for many businesses, shouldn't affect the long-term value in the way that sometimes we see in the stock market, where shares can fall 50, 60, 70% in a very short period of time. So you've got to get to the coalface and you've got to start turning stones and looking at businesses, understanding why things are going wrong in the short term, and then trying to analyze what can businesses do about that? How can they improve their situation? How can they shore up their finances? And ultimately, what is the level of profits that they might make in a more normal environment? Now, when things are going very badly wrong, if we think about today or the great financial crisis or you know, 2001, 9/11, these periods, it feels like in some ways things have permanently changed. They'll never be the same again. But the reality is that we have this amazing capacity to adapt, to improve. Businesses or organisms, they improve, they cut costs, they move to the new reality. And most businesses, not all, but most, will go on to see a more normal environment again in the future. And there are bargains to be had. So you've got to get to the coalface and there is no substitute for turning stones. I think the second thing that you've got to do is, you know, you get to the coalface, but what do? And I think sometimes in a crisis, you want to start thinking of a different way to act. Let's behave differently. Times have changed. I need to change too. But I think in many respects, that's an error. People, fund managers, investors spend a lot of time thinking about their process, honing it over a very, very kind of extended periods, both good and bad. And what you fundamentally got is a process you believe in that you think allows you to try and identify the better stocks, the better investments over time. And now is the time to trust that process, to fall back on what you have done, what you have worked on, you know, something you have refined over a period of time, and to really trust that process. In our case, we have a process based on the four steps of investing, our four edges as we see it, the areas where we think we can have a small but meaningful advantage over other investors in the stock market, based around information, based around analysis, based around our behaviors and controlling them. And I'm sure Stu will talk more about that. And then based on how we learn from our judgments over time. And that's a process that in this crisis we've fallen back on very heavily and have used and relied on to try and extract that value in a period in which shares are moving in a potentially very unsettling and difficult way.
Stu, we're all pretty much sports fans on this podcast. How many times have we watched a sport on TV, looked at a coach when things are going wrong for their team and thinking, why don't you try something different? When in fact, actually sticking to their plan might have actually been the best option. But it takes a brave man, and in this case, a brave investor, to trust in their process when they get back to the coalface.
Absolutely. I mean, trusting your process, I think, infers that, you know, this is potentially about evolution over the longer term, not necessarily revolution of a process. What you don't want is some sort of knee-jerk reaction under positions of pressure or under conditions of stress. Certainly in terms of trusting process, it's worth remembering that we live, you know, with a great deal of uncertainty. Now and at all other times. And under those conditions, I think accurate levels of confidence are as important as the quality of the decisions we make. So there's a friend of mine, Liz Moore, who's currently associated with UCL's Cognitive Decision Sciences course, and she talks about requisite doubt. I love that phrase, requisite doubt in any decision-making or process that you have relating to your investments. In other words, requisite doubt can encourage you to seek a bit more information, or it can encourage you to invest more resources. And I know Nick has done that with his team in the past. Effectively, what you're doing is saying there might be something we need to explore a little more closely here, but that falls within the context of our process. And I think it's also worth advisors, when they're talking to their own clients, it's worth their reminding investors of what the investment was designed to do in the first place when it was introduced to a plan, such as performance relative to benchmark, because the temptation is to throw it all up in the air and say, well, hang on a minute. This is not working. But a quick reminder that it is working according to plan can sometimes calm people down. And don't forget, we make comparisons under pressure quite frequently. So, you know, very often people will feel that everybody else is doing really well and they're missing out. And that fear of missing out can sometimes cause people to throw the process out of the window when they should be doing quite the reverse. I just wanted to touch on something that Nick said as well about the coalface. Yeah, I think, again, it's worth remembering, no one said any of this was going to be easy. It's really difficult. And that reminded me of something called cognitive fluency. That's the sort of subjective ease or difficulty that we experience when we're thinking about something. And this plays quite an important role, actually, in the way we evaluate information and make decisions. And Nick is always talking about how difficult the team finds that. And I'm always reassured by the fact that he says that. And the reason I reflect upon that is that things that are very easy for us to process give us a momentary sort of burst of pleasure. We feel good about it, and we prefer to think about these things rather than things that are harder to process. And what that results in sometimes is a sort of cognitive fluency that then misattributes the sensation of ease to the thing that we experience rather than the thing we're trying to solve or the challenge we're trying to meet. And so that can lead us to think that something that is very fluent is also very right or good or the right thing to do. And that can be quite dangerous. So if you're out there trying to invest through these kinds of times, well, just remember that actually it's tough. And I take great solace from this, actually, because when you think about it, when you're working on something and you find it hard going, like putting together a financial plan or maintaining that plan, maintaining a team and investing as Nick is doing, it's easy to assume that you're not making much progress, actually, when it's tough, and to become disillusioned and to give up. Well, actually, you know, very often our brains in the reverse can confuse perceived difficulty with a lack of progress. And actually, in reality, whilst that task might be hard, we might actually be doing some good work to get through it in the long term, even though it doesn't feel like it at the time.
Sounds like producing a podcast. I kid. So in the final part of the show, so we fixed the roof, we've been at the coalface turning over those stones, and we're going to trust in our process. In the final part of the show, we'll be looking at keeping our discipline, which is rule number four, and being brave, the final rule number five. So we've trusted our process, but things still aren't rosy in the garden. So, Nick, what do we mean by rule four, which is keeping our discipline?
Yeah, I mean, rule four and five, in some respects, are kind of two sides of the same coin. And this is the kind of paradox of investing. You're always kind of threading a fine line between things that are pulling you in different directions. But rule four is keep your discipline. And what we mean by that is there's suddenly a lot of stocks to look at. You're at the coalface, you're turning stones, and there's loads of stocks to be looking at, particularly if you're a value investor. Lots of things are falling. Many things are becoming interesting in terms of their valuations. But don't just bite at anything. You know, you've got to have a very clear view on what actually makes a company cheap, on how you appraise the risk of that investment, and continue to compare the risk and the reward in the same way you did before the crisis. Hold on to your discipline. Don't just keep lunging at things, you know, the next cab off the rank, stocks that are 10% cheaper than you would have had them, you know, 6 months before. We're now looking at a very different world with very different risks, and you've got to maintain your discipline and make sure that you buy stocks at the right price and the confidence that you can continue to average down if things get worse, or when things improve, that you'll make good money for your investors. I think the difficulty with this, and this is where I say you get pulled in different directions, is sometimes when you're keeping your discipline, people can see that as, you know, perhaps, well, I don't want to bite at anything. Things are continuing to get worse. We're in a crisis where the economics are unraveling. Even today, with the stock market looking pretty rosy, we would look at the world and say, there's still a lot of uncertainty. Will we have more lockdowns? We've just been through one of the worst recessions in history for almost every country in the world. The knock-on effects of unemployment. What does that mean? I think in that instance, you can become incredibly negative. And we have an expression that you can break any business if you want to. And that just means that when you're trying to think of the forecasting the future, particularly in the near term, and you're looking at how safe businesses are and their balance sheets, it's possible to concoct a scenario that sees things get worse or sees that business in trouble. But it's about how realistic these scenarios are. And that's why you need to be brave. I hold to an adage that an investor I respect, kind of continuously reinforces, which is you make all your money in a bear market. You just don't realize it at the time. Ultimately, times like this where stock markets are collapsing or have collapsed, those are the greatest opportunities in history to buy into stocks. And you need to do something. In absolute terms, you can't make money not buying a company. You might look clever in the short term if those shares continue to fall, but you can only make money for your investors when you actually buy something. And so at the end of the day, no matter how difficult things are, how hard the analysis is, or how troubled you are by the environment, you need to look into the future and at some point be brave and buy things for your clients.
Stuart, there must be a fine line between being brave and being reckless.
Oh, there is. I mean, it's very easy to say, isn't it? Keep your discipline when all is going well. But actually, what about keeping your discipline when stocks are down and potentially falling still further? One thing I've discovered as well in some of my studies is the idea that sometimes when you share ideas with others, it can increase your overconfidence. Actually, as you share it with other people and you rehearse that narrative, you start to convince yourself through repetition. But that's not to say that that's always a bad thing, that actually getting the meeting dynamics, getting the social norms in teamwork right, I think is critically important under these circumstances. What you want to do is avoid what Cyril Parkinson called the coefficient of inefficiency, the idea that work expands to fill the time available for its completion, a somewhat amusing reference, but nonetheless really appropriate here, because people can end up drifting in all sorts of directions and increasing their overconfidence just simply by, to put it bluntly, waffling on. Keeping it tight, keeping that discipline, understanding and challenging, bringing into the open any misgivings, they're all important. And I come back to Mir Statman here. you know, if you've got three basic steps in terms of keeping your discipline, they've got to be all about acquiring financial facts and behavioral knowledge, activating system two when you sense system one alerts. And then if you can't activate system two, then simply seek external help. And that's, to my mind, exactly why financial advice and planning has such an important role to play. I think Nick also mentioned something about the time to be brave. I think it's always the time to be brave when it comes to investing. Clearly, he's referencing the breadth and the speed of and the reactivity of a team resource in order to invest. For many clients out there, it's not just going to be about headlines of individual stocks, of course. I'd encourage them when they're trying to be brave to think about some of the hindsight errors that lead many investors out there to believe that they'll always beat the market investing in FANG stocks, for example. And when considering which fund managers to work with, you know, don't forget that base rate information. You know, just because a manager might have taken a maths degree or postgrad at Harvard or an MBA from Columbia doesn't necessarily mean that that individual will beat the benchmark for the coming 10 years. Representativeness and base rate information are really important there, and they really help people take brave decisions.
And that's the show. You can read more from Nick Kirridge on these themes by searching for Schroder's Value Perspective blog. There's some fascinating and unique views on there. The Value Perspective also has its own podcast, part of the Schroder's Podcast Network. It's about decision-making under pressure, and they interview a wide range of people from all walks of life. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Basically the same as the Investor Download. So don't forget to rate and review us there. You can also get in touch with us for ideas for future shows at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com. And read and listen to lots more from us at schroders.com/the investor download. New investor downloads are available every Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above everything, keep safe and go well. Cheers. We'll be right back.